The Daily Connect Podcast, the voice of the RNIB Connect community.
Hello, I'm Stephen Scott and welcome to another Daily Connect Podcast. This time it's for Thursday, the 9th of August 2018. And great to have your company. Coming up on the podcast today, we remind you of an incredible story of how you see. We're going to hear from Kirsty James, who talks about living with Stargardt, as well as Charles Bonnet syndrome. That's coming up. We've also got the news review as well. Joining us for that, we've got Mike Holroyd, who works for RNIB, as does Nikki Kelly. She's also a singer as well, and she joins us to talk about the week's news. We're going to be talking about the rules of seeing, the new book. Would you want your sight back if you could get it? And also, what's your experience been of personal independence payment? That's coming up on the podcast today. We've also got your views as well. Chris, our producer, joins us in the studio. And our Society of the Week gets another chance to be heard. It is the Macula Society. We'll hear from one of its users, and that is Ken Eggleston, coming up on the podcast today.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
But first, we start with our big topic of the week, and that is shared spaces. We've been talking about it all week on the show and getting your views on the schemes. The good news is, and there is good and bad news here, but the good news is that the schemes have been brought to a halt. So any new schemes will not be happening. The UK government have made that announcement last week. However, the bad news is that in some areas, the effects of shared spaces will remain for some time because the schemes have been put in place. And whilst reversal may happen, it will take time. Well, we're going to hear now from Sarah Gayton. She's been talking to Basil Oxtoby. Sarah is a keen campaigner. You might have heard her even on this programme earlier in the week. But she's been talking to Basil about the campaign and also RNIB's upcoming How I See video, which is all about shared spaces.
Sarah Gayton is the Shared Space Coordinator for the National Federation of the Blind of the UK, also known as NFB UK. She joined me in the studio to discuss shared spaces, as well as telling me that she could also use your support. So Sarah, let's start with a basic question for people that may not know. What is a shared space?
Yeah, shared space is simply where they take the curb away or significantly lower that curb. So blind people using a white cane or using a guide dog, the curb disappears, so you can't actually use that space. It becomes very scary and a lot of people just stop going into those areas. They also take away control crossings and either put a courtesy crossing in place that has none of the features like the bleep, the push button or the cone underneath to let you know when it's your turn to cross that street. Sometimes they put zebra crossings in as well, but again, as we know, these are still not good enough for a blind person to truly know when it's their turn to cross a busy road.
For people that are listening, including me, that might not know, courtesy crossing.
Exactly. What is a courtesy crossing? It has nothing to tell you when to cross. It will have a small row of tactile, and that's about it. So there's nothing to tell the vehicle. It has no legal obligation to stop, and you have to make the choice if you want to cross that road or not.
And why is it that you've, because you are sighted yourself, aren't you, why is it that you've kind of got involved in all this?
I met Lord Chris Holmes in 2011 on the build-up to the Paralympics, and his talk and his speech about how he became blind and what he went on to do with his career, it really made an impact on me. So when in 2012, during the year of the Paralympics, they started to put shared space in my hometown of Leek, I thought, hold on, Chris wouldn't be able to walk down here, and this wasn't the legacy I envisaged for Britain. So when it did come into our town, I suddenly realised, I met with the National Federation of the Blind of the UK, and we started to realise these schemes were going in and everywhere across the country. And I just could not turn a blind eye to that. I couldn't sit back. I knew that this would be a problem, and I had to do something about it.
And the reason we're talking is because something recently has been announced.
Oh, definitely. Well, what has happened is that the Disabled People's Transport Access Committee, DIPTAC, has actually come out with a position statement on shared space. Now, this committee is funded by the Department of Transport itself, and it is clearly stated that shared space must be halted and all schemes must have a very detailed review. And the guidance underneath it, it's called Shared Space 111, Local Transport Note Shared Space 111, is not fit for purpose. So this is absolutely a massive, powerful statement back to the Department of Transport to say, you've got to stop what you're doing. Also, the Minister for Disabled People, the Right Honourable Sarah Newton, also wrote two amazingly strong letters to the Department of Transport and to the Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government, basically telling them that shared space was against the Equality Act. That is a minister absolutely telling other ministers that, and Secretary of State, that shared space has to stop It has to implement the Women and Equalities Report. It has to go back and review and modify these schemes that have been put in across the country. So these two hugely significant pieces, well, two letters and a position statement, it could fundamentally change how local authorities now approach urban design in our town centres.
And what about people that may say, oh, well, I quite like a shared space, you know, some people I'm sure will see a benefit to it.
To be honest, Lord Chris Holmes' report, I think it was over 60% of people just didn't like shared space. They didn't like it, and 30% of people around that figure wouldn't go into these schemes. So there's actually quite a significant proportion of the population, not just blind people, don't like it. Also, what the DIPTAC committee said, what their position stated, was that it was just not just blind people, it's people with learning difficulties, people with neurodiverse conditions, other disabilities that simply cannot use these schemes and don't feel safe in them. So if we actually look at it as a whole, why would you want to put these schemes in? Why wouldn't you want to create a beautiful looking environment that could be accessed by all? And that's simply, you know, put a curb in. A curb is our safety feature. It stops us walking out into the street. It stops children in the tracks running in front of cars. Why wouldn't you want to stop the traffic when you want to cross the road? Why do you want to battle with all these traffic? They're in confusion. They're in chaos. They don't know if you want to cross or not cross. Why put that confusion into the road? And people have been killed, vulnerable people have been killed in these schemes. Accidents are still happening. So I am positive we can make our town centres much more attractive, improve the pavement, you know, improve the surface of them, and make it safer for everybody.
But if we look at countries, say, like Holland and Amsterdam, for example, cities like Amsterdam, who have a very big shared spacing, it seems to be working over there. Why do you think that is and not really here in the UK?
I don't think it is working in Holland as what they profess. I've seen articles online where, again, provision for blind people have not been implemented. When they've gone back to implement those schemes, there's the tiniest little bit of tactile. And I would challenge them, how would people actually use that confidently? So I've seen people just recently tweet that, you know, shared space is a disaster for disabled people in Holland. So again, I went recently to a conference on walking and cycling, and again, there were cycling advocates there, and there were people from Holland, somebody from the lady from one of the ministries of Holland of infrastructure, and I asked her the question, you know, we've got this hidden problem in Britain for blind people. She said, it wasn't her area, but she said, we don't have that hidden problem here. We don't have that problem. I thought, well, have you actually gone out and asked people? And I don't think they have.
And again, when we spoke on the phone earlier on, you told me about the call for evidence that you're currently going through.
Definitely. There's been a significant amount of evidence that's already been submitted to the Women and Equalities Report and to the Draft Accessibility Action Plan. But I know there'll be people out there that probably didn't even hear about those inquiries going on. So what I would really like is that if anybody else has got any stories where they can't access their town centres or have to go in with sighted assistance, are absolutely scared out of their wits to use their high streets because curbs have been lowered or taken away or control crossings have disappeared, I would love to know about it, please, because the more and more evidence that we have, it all, we can put that back to government, continually put it back to government and say, this is not just one or two people speaking out, because we cannot and will not lose this fight. Because if we do, what you're facing is a future with a much less accessible urban environment. And these designers and architects, they're just going on anyway. They do want to learn, but we have to have more and more evidence. So please do send it in.
Where can they send it to find you?
If they can contact the National Federation of the Blind of the UK, that will give out the email here. But you can contact on my mobile. It's 07903 155858. Now, I will phone you back because I know most people don't like phoning mobiles, but if you get direct to me, I can ring you and we can take evidence down or email it to the Federation or leave a phone message on the Federation's landline.
Well, thank you very much for talking to us here at RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you very much.
So if you want to give any evidence on how a shared space has affected you, either call Sarah on 07903 155 858. That's 07903 155858, or contact NFB UK on 01924 291 313. That's 01924 291 313, or their email admin@nfbuk.org.
Thank you to Basil Oxtoby there and to Sarah Gayton. More talk on shared spaces on tomorrow's Daily Connect.
The Daily Connect podcast.
Now, what do you think? Would you want your eyesight back if you had the chance to get it back? Also, What was your experience of the personal independence payment process? Did you go through it yourself? And if so, what did you think about it? Well, those are our topics on the News Review today. With me to discuss those on the programme today were Nikki Kelly, community facilitator in Birmingham, and Mike Holroyd from Glasgow, who is also a community facilitator at RNIB. Good morning to you both, and thank you for being on the podcast.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We're here to talk about the news again this week, but we actually don't start with a news story. We start with a story about a book that just arrived in the RNIB Talking Books Library this week. It's called The Rules of Seeing, and it's written by Joe Heap. Now, quick synopsis of the book. Person with no vision at all is able to get her sight back. She regains some of her vision, and spoiler alert, well, it doesn't really work out for her. She isn't happy about it at all, because she feels her life is entirely different as a result of seeing. She doesn't really understand the world she's looking at, so it's not a good experience for her. Now, of course, you can understand people who might get rather upset with that notion, because if you could get your sight back, a lot of people would be wanting it. But I guess that is kind of leading us to the question, would we want our vision back? So that's what I thought we'd kick off with, just sort of off the bat here on the News Review, because I think it's an interesting question. So first thing, Mike, tell us, if you don't mind, about your eye condition and what you have and how long you've had it.
Yeah, so I have been visually impaired basically since I was born. Have retinitis pigmentosa and nystagmus, and like most people with RP, it's quotes degenerated, unquotes, sort of over the last few years.
Okay, so it will get worse, I guess, will it?
It's probably probably stabled out as far as we can tell.
Right.
And worse is an interesting word, but there we go.
Well, yeah, well, exactly. This is what this conversation is about. And what about you, Nikki? What's your eye condition? Where are you with it?
Yeah, so I have optic atrophy and keratoconus. I acquired my sight loss at the age of 22.
Okay, so... And I'll just put it out there, I've got optic nerve hypoplasia, which basically means the optic nerve never developed properly, and nystagmus as well. So, hey, we're brothers with nystagmus here, Mike.
We're not competing for long words, are we?
No, just don't ask me to spell it. I have to ask my Amazon Echo to do that. Yeah. But, okay, so let's talk about that then. So, if you could get all your vision back, if you could have 20/20 vision tomorrow, Mike, would you?
No.
No?
Absolutely not.
Interesting. I would have pitched you to say yes. Okay, so why?
For me, living with a visual impairment has always been part of who I am. It doesn't define me, but it's part of who I am. Mm-hmm. And so to think about having sight is a bit like saying, you know, other parts of my character, my personality, why would I want to change those? You know, I'm tall, why would I want to change that? I identify as a gay man, why would I want to change that? So I would say, for my visual impairment, I think the same. Why is living without a visual impairment superior to living with a visual impairment?
Okay, right. That's an interesting one to kick off. Nikki, where do you stand on it? Would you want all your sight back if you could?
I guess it's a bit of an interesting one. I wouldn't necessarily want it back, but I would like to be able to drive again, because that's what I miss most.
Right, so you want your sight back then, don't you? You need it back.
Yeah, just for that, but for everything else, I feel that I guess my life kind of got better from losing my sight.
See, I hear that a lot. I always am intrigued by that. What do you mean by your life got better?
I think I probably got more stubborn and decided I had to prove myself and do more with my life. So I guess the sight loss spurred that on, whereas if I was fully sighted, I probably wouldn't be pursuing music. I'd probably just be coasting along. So...
Yeah, I mean, it's different for me, obviously, because of living with a visual impairment since I was born, basically. Mm. So I don't have that kind of change in life. But I do, you know, having worked in the sight loss sector for a long time, I do see that in many, many people who, for whom the experience of acquiring visual impairment, even later in life, has opened up a huge amount of opportunities which they may not have had before. So I think it is important to look at the value of living with a visual impairment or with a disability. I think it does change your perspective, not only on your own personal experience, but on the world as well. And I think that's a very valuable insight to have.
From my own point of view, and I can only talk from me, but from my perspective, I'd love my full vision back. And I'll tell you why. Because I'm at that point, I think, where I've got irritating eyesight. It's kind of too useless to do much with, but it's useful enough to get in the way, if that makes any sense at all. You know, it's at that kind of point where, you know, I can see things, but not any detail. And, you know, like, I mean, I'll give you an example. Sitting in front of the computer, I can see the screen and I know that, you know, there's certain things on the screen, but I couldn't tell you what any of them are. And it's those details that I lose. So I'm at that point where, and I've said before to friends, and, you know, especially sighted friends worry when I say this. I'll say, I sometimes wonder what it would be like actually just having no vision at all. Hmm. And they get horrified by that. They're like, you can't say that. Well, I can say it, I just have. But I sometimes wonder if you're better off without than having the struggle and the strain. So I guess for that reason, I would want mine back.
It's interesting how some people live in a kind of sighted world with less vision, and other people live in a kind of visually impaired world with a little bit of vision. If you see what I mean? You kind of straddle, as I think all three of us are saying, we straddle two worlds where we can see some things and we can't see other things. I used to have this phrase when a few years ago, RNIB used to have one of the strategic aims was about sight loss prevention. And I used to get really irritated about saying, why do you want to prevent something that is really valuable to me? I like to talk about sight retention. So for people who want their sight and for whom it is valuable, I don't want to take away from that at all. But I also don't want people who are sighted or who have more vision than me to say that my experience of visual impairment isn't valued.
Are you saying that you don't want people to think that sight loss is a bad thing?
Absolutely.
What do you think about that, Nikki? Does that make sense to you?
Well, yes, it does. It does make sense that you don't want people to think it's a bad thing. But it's, you know, we are, most of us are born with eyes which are there to see. So to not have that is a negative thing, I think. And I guess the way you react to it can either be positive or negative. But to not have sight, it does, in some ways, close you off to many opportunities. However, in terms of, you know, if you wanted to fly a plane, you couldn't do it if you're completely blind or visually impaired. So it does, I think that there are negative sides to it. But for me personally, like you mentioned earlier, Mike, that losing sight has opened up more opportunities to me. But I feel that the opportunities were always there. It's just that I never pursued them at that when I was fully sighted, and I've always wanted to, but I guess losing the sight made me have no choice but to pursue them, because it was something that I could still do.
I want to think of it like chocolate. Chocolate is a good thing for some people and a bad thing for other people for many different reasons, but chocolate itself is neutral. It doesn't have a good or a bad, and I would see sight loss like that. For some people, it is a negative experience, and I don't want to take away from that. And for other people, it's a neutral or even a positive experience, and we need to be open to those possibilities in everybody.
Yeah, it can be a positive experience, but I guess from my perspective, I was born fully sighted, and then to lose what I've had is a very negative experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And Nikki, I know I would totally support that. It's just about, we need to change the public perception that labels something as good or bad. So for me, sight loss is a very positive thing. For you, it's a mixture because you've had full sight, and both. There is no right or wrong about either of those views, but I want in the public eye for people to think of sight loss as a neutral thing.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're going to come back and talk about some other news stories, actually, that are doing the rounds. That did interest me, though, and that book, I think, is going to raise a lot of interest. My copy has arrived, and I'm looking forward to listening to it. So maybe we should all have a listen to it and get together again and see what we think after that. Right, Nikki and Mike, stay right there. We're going to come back after this. We'll be talking more about what's in the news this week on The Daily Connect.
The Daily Connect podcast.
Now, before we go back to the news review, let's join Kirsty James, who told us this week on the programme all about her eye conditions. She has Stargardt's disease, and one of the side effects, if you like, of Stargardt's is a condition called Charles Bonnet syndrome. Now, it's not unique to people with Stargardt's, but those with it do tend to have experience of this. Kirsty explains what Charles Bonnet syndrome is, also what Stargardt's is, and how she sees and feels about it.
I was in year 9 of high school, and I remember when I first started to notice my sight going, I went back to start a new term, and then I was sat in registration. I was looking at the board, and it was in green pen, and I was thinking, I can't see it. And I thought, well, it must be just because it's in green. So I just sort of like blagged my way and wrote the timetable. Obviously, later realised that you can't just make up a timetable because you'll end up in the wrong classes. And that is when I was diagnosed with Stargardt's disease, especially the way that it was delivered to me as well. You know, you're going to go blind. That's pretty hard hitting at any age that you're at, but not made aware that being registered blind doesn't mean completely blind. It wasn't explained well until a couple of years ago. You know, I really thought I was going to go completely blind because of the way that the diagnosis was delivered to me. I remember when I got diagnosed, this sudden feeling of a black brick just hit me. And that feeling didn't go for many years. That heaviness of the sight loss, I think. That's, even though it was good things and positive things were happening in my life, I was in complete denial. And I remember this one particular day, I looked out of the window and I lived opposite a church and I could no longer see the door or anything of the church. It just sort of disappeared. It was like a big blurry grey circle. And I thought, oops. I remember that horrible feeling of just devastation. And it was just when I've lost my sight. And something just said to me there and then, got to deal with it now. Can't keep running away in denial. I'm actually registered blind. And that was the first moment. So it took until 2012, from 2003, for me to actually wake up and go, for this to happen, for me to say, wow, I actually have lost my sight. And I just remember looking out of the window, just being completely devastated at that point. Before then, I wasn't using a cane. I didn't use magnification. You know, I was pretty independent. I was very independent. I was a free spirit. I did what I wanted to do. And all of a sudden, I couldn't leave the house on my own. I couldn't make a cup of tea. I couldn't cook. Cooking was a massive passion of mine. I couldn't read music anymore. All these huge things I had to like suddenly changed overnight. And then I just remembered thinking like, I have got to deal with this. And as much as it was like a really dark hole, it was actually the beginning of me moving forward in some crazy way. Yeah, Charles Bonnet syndrome is something that happens with, is common with different eye conditions, that when there's a deterioration in vision, it can cause hallucinations because the brain, his activity gets overexcited and puts different images there, whether it's, you know, nice things like flowers or horrible goblins. It's just different from various person to person. Mine are when the lights are low, like all different colours come in and it's like very pixelated, which sounds lovely, but it's quite an inconvenience when you're watching TV. You just want to watch TV. Things that are out of place. So say if you're living in some, you went to a house and they had a really random object that shouldn't be in there. For argument's sake, let's just say a lawnmower. my brain wouldn't be able to see there's a lawnmower because I've got no central vision. So it would try everything to put an image there, but would be in context. But because it's out of context, I would then hallucinate because it can't work out what it is. That's the best way I sort of describe it. It took a long time for me to actually talk about it. When I started to notice, I was a bit scared because I was thinking, am I losing my mind? And I stayed silent for a long time. I can't really think how long. But Tom, my now husband, was the first person I actually asked. I said, I looked out the window and I thought, I lived in a narrow street. It was full of lorries. And I said, why are there loads of lorries down here? It's a small street. And he's like, Kirsty, there's nothing there. And that's when I really started to think, oh, that's a bit weird. I thought I'd better talk about this. And I just started little bits to open up to Tom. Tom was completely unaware of the things I was sharing with him because I'd never shared that with anybody. And it was starting to feel like a huge relief. For the first time in many years, I was talking about how I actually felt with my sight loss. Just talk about it. Just talk. And then it gets easier because a lot of people stay silent. And that's what the terrifying part is.
Thank you so much to Kirsty for sharing her thoughts on the podcast this week. Kirsty James there in Wales.
The Daily Connect podcast.
This is The Daily Connect on RNIB Connect Radio. I'm with Mike Holroyd and Nikki Kelly today. We're going through the different news stories that are doing the rounds. Earlier we were talking about that new book, The Rules of Seeing by Joe Heap, which you can get from the RNIB Talking Books Library right now. Go get it and tell us what you think about it, because I think it does open up a really interesting debate around what would it be like if we all got our sight back? Would it be a good thing or a bad thing? Interesting debate from earlier. But let's move on to personal independence payment. I know, it's a nightmare topic. Personal independence payment, the DWP have been criticised endlessly over their handling of this. People with all kinds of disabilities have had real problems getting hold of this benefit. And, you know, the stories have been so upsetting. People have been going through terrible things. And I just wanted to talk to you guys about your experience. Because, you know, as blind people, there was a suggestion when personal independence payment was coming through that blind people would really lose out, because it was kind of almost sensed that those of us who are disabled had to really be disabled to get this benefit, if that makes sense. I don't know quite what that means exactly, what we should be doing to be more disabled, but that was certainly the interpretation I got from it. So, Mike, we'll kick off with you. How did you get on with yours? Because you've been through the process.
I have, yeah. And for me, it was, by and large, a very positive process. There was a bit.
Oh, you're the only one. Eh? You're the one guy.
I know. I've spoken to lots of people who have had quite positive experiences. I did have one little hiccup towards the beginning. I think they wrote to me, probably in print, and I missed it for some strange reason. They then said, well, because you didn't respond in the right time, you're going to have to come for a face-to-face interview, which I shouldn't have needed to have had to do. And by making a bit of a fuss over that, or quite a lot of a fuss over that, I didn't have to do the face-to-face interview and actually got awarded the full amount of both, which was a higher award than I was on with DLA. So for me, the process actually was relatively easy, apart from that one little hiccup. Now, it does help that part of the work that I've done in the past has been welfare rights advisor. So,
oh, right, okay. So probably should have mentioned that at the start. Okay. Yeah.
So, but I mean, I suppose over the years I've got used to not what to write, because you just write about yourself, but it's so easy when you apply for these benefits to think, no, I don't need help with that, don't need help with that. What is good for blind and partially sighted people about PIP is that there's a very, very clear set of criteria for how many points you can score for this, that and the other. And that was never around, as far as I'm aware, with DLA. So for PIP, actually, I think the rules are actually much clearer, particularly for blind and partially sighted people. It's actually I think, improved. And I know at the time of PIP, there were some difficulties over what qualified as a mobility aid. And there was one bit of a strange legislation that said if you had a guide dog, you would get, say, 12 points. I'm not sure of the exact points, but if you had a guide dog, you'd get 12. If you had a long cane, you get 8. And there was clearly and rightly a big protest about, well, what's the difference? You know, if you need a mobility aid like a cane or a dog, then they should be equal. And that was resolved it's not like me to praise the DWP, but it was resolved, and me amongst many others have been real beneficiaries of that. So yeah, I would say generally a positive experience.
Right, Nikki, what about you?
Yes, I must say I've had a really positive experience. The form was a nightmare, and I had to get someone else to fill that in for me. But after I filled in a form and sent that off, I got a call from them asking when they can come out to see me, which I was really surprised at, because I was under the impression that I would have to go find an office somewhere and get assessed. But they came out to see me, and within a few weeks of that, they sent me a letter to say that I'm actually getting more than I got with disability living allowance. So again, I had a really positive experience.
So I guess my question is, and obviously this is a bit of a straw poll here, because there's only the three of us here, you know, we've all ended up on that full rate, as you say, which is fantastic, but it doesn't really fit into that national narrative about how bad the experience has been. And I think we can all agree to some extent that the form filling has been horrendous. If we had to do that ourselves, I don't know, you probably did yours yourself, I imagine, if you're you're fairly good at that. But, you know, I had somebody help me with mine. My experience wasn't great. I mean, the outcome was good, but the experience was horrendous. I mean, my disability living allowance had been stopped for several months. I was sent letters telling me I had to attend meetings. The meetings were cancelled at the last minute. And then I was asked that someone could come to the house. The person never turned up. And in the end, because I had someone with me, and that would be the advice I would give anyone if they're going for it, get some help from a charity or an organisation like RNIB, because, you know, you really do benefit from that person was on the phone and really sort of dealt with it, and essentially got an admission from the person who she was talking to say, well, look, we've really kind of screwed this up, there's no need for any of these assessments. It's clear. So here's the next step of this. I get the award, and my advisor who helped me with all of this, welfare rights person, she came to the house and she said, listen, I'm going to drop off a copy of your form just in case you need it for any purpose. So she'd left me an audio copy, which was rather helpful, and I listened to it, and I was thoroughly depressed because I thought to myself, okay, I got the award, that's good, but it feels a bit bittersweet because I've listened to this thinking, and I know there's people out there who say maybe, you know, play on it a bit or, you know, exaggerate this, or I didn't do any of that. And I thought, wow, all that was true. And actually, I don't know how I feel about that. You know, I felt a bit down after it, if I'm honest, because it made me realise what I was incapable of doing. Either of you have that feeling?
Yes, yeah, so I was the same when I read through mine, because my sister helped me do it. And, you know, after you've written it all down, you go through it and she read it out, and she was kind of taken aback as well. She was like, I didn't realise you struggled this much. And it was like, well... And you kind of just get on with it every day, but when it's kind of, it's like killing me softly, isn't it? When someone's reading it back out to you, you just like, wow, it is quite depressing, I guess. But the other side of that is obviously with, you know, the PIP and whatever other benefits we get can help us to alleviate some of that pressure and stress that we may have.
More entitled to it, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, and to think that people may have filled that out and said similar things to us and not get it is madness. And with my award, although I did get it, I've got to be reassessed again in 2 years' time. And
yeah, me too.
So, well, unless the miracle cure comes in the next couple of years, it seems like a pointless task.
That's really... Well, really sad to hear that, because my understanding is that people with long-term conditions, that the move was against sort of short-term reassessments. My award was 10 years, which is the maximum award they can give.
Which what did you write on that form?
I have to try and find it. But this issue about the form telling a story which doesn't sit comfortably with us, because we, I think most of us, if not all of us who have a visual impairment, have it drummed into us either by ourselves or by others that, you know, we need to do what we can for ourselves and be independent. Of course, the reality is nobody is independent, but that, you know, we see on that form a kind of a distillation of life experience in those paragraphs, and but life isn't like that. So what I suppose what I'm trying to say is when we listen to that form, that's a lot of stuff in one place, and we're not going through every minute of every day with all of those needs all at once.
That's true.
And I've always said to people, you know, it is tough doing these forms. It's tough thinking about everything that we need and the help that we need. And it can be depressing, but it is just, it's the best tool we have to communicate our needs. And to be honest, I would rather do that than have some professional who doesn't know me very well fill in a form, and then find that, you know, you don't get the benefit or whatever.
Do you agree with that, Nikki?
Yes, yeah, completely.
Well, listen, it's been less of a news review and more of a therapy session, but, you know, I've really enjoyed it. Guys, thank you so much for coming on. Mike Holroyd and Nikki Kelly, thank you for joining us for the review today.
You're welcome.
Thanks for having us. Thank you.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
This is the Daily Connect on RNIB Connect Radio, and time now to catch up with what you've been saying about the topics we've been discussing here on the Daily Connect. And with me to go through those views from you is our producer, Chris Wallace, who joins us now. Good to have you here, Chris.
Thanks, Stephen. It's great to be here.
So what are people saying this week?
Well, there's been a lot of conversation about your Connect conversation on shared spaces this week.
Okay.
A lot of people with views. Ian Beverly has been in touch via email. He says, "Hi, Stephen. Really interesting discussion regarding shared spaces this morning. It's definitely a good move that they have been paused, but has most of the damage been done by councils going ahead over the last 20 or so years with the schemes that are in place? Any change away from this is good, though, and now I guess the work continues in trying to get the authorities to look at different options. I have an idea which you may have considered already, but interested to know if you think it'd work. With tech as it is it possible through a binaural mic to record sound across the spectrum? One of the difficulties of navigating through busy environments is that sound comes from all over, even with a guide dog, when we're trying to judge where things are. Depicting a sound picture of a commute and a journey through varying environments would be at least to give a sound image of the things that you need to contend with. I know on my walk to the office there is a train station, a narrow street walking away from there, a shared space at the time of day I commute anyway, and other environments. I'm absolutely sure you could get many more examples of this as well. Just a thought. Cheers, Ian Beverly."
I think that's a great idea, Ian. I think you might have just answered your own question, though. Get your own binaural mic out and let's see what it sounds like. I think we should hear that. I'm going to see if I can get one of those things and try some recording as well. It's not something I've ever experienced very much on that. Okay, Chris, what else?
And we've another email from Lynn Renison, who says, "Dear Daily Connect, great interview with Sandy Taylor of the NFB UK. Shared spaces are a visually impaired person's worst nightmare. All the hazards we have to encounter, no curb to indicate where the road begins and sidewalk ends, A-boards and a courtesy crossing concept where we as VI make eye contact with the vehicle driver is a ridiculous idea. Whoever came up with that is obviously not VI. And the most ridiculous idea so far, sharing our sidewalk with a cyclist, which I cannot hear. I want to go into my local town centre, but there are so many issues I find it difficult and it makes me anxious to use it, so I avoid it. Sandy had some fabulous points to make. I can't even get to my local train station because I have no controlled crossing. On the busy A6 road here in Adlington, I have to get a taxi from my home to there. We do have to keep banging the drum of shared space. We just want to have the right to cross our roads safely and to have access to our towns and transport. Is it too much to ask? I think not. That's kindest regards from Lynn Renison.
Thanks, Lynn. Really good to hear from you on that. And yes, we will keep banging the drum because that's what the show's all about. If you want to talk about it, then we will continue to talk about it. Shared space is a huge issue. And, you know, what's interesting about this is it does affect everybody. It's not unique to people who are blind or partially sighted. This has impact on everybody. So, yes, please do continue to share your views. Okay, what else, Chris?
And our final email comes from Pardy Gill, who just says, "Hello, I'm delighted that government have finally listened to the voice of VIPs regarding the inaccessibility of shared spaces. My vision has significantly deteriorated over the past year, so I'm more reliant than ever on controlled crossings, curbs and tactile markings when navigating independently in London with my white cane work. I'm originally from Leicester, where I run a local VIP forum, and we have a shared space called Jubilee Square, which is a no-go area as there are sheer drops. Control crossings have been removed, making the city centre more inaccessible. As Sandy said, there are also major issues with cyclists. We need segregated areas for pedestrians with no ambiguity. It's very positive that organisations around the country such as RNIB and NFB are working extremely hard to raise awareness of these vital issues to the general public, as it's crucial we maintain momentum in raising awareness." And that's from Pardy Gill.
Yeah, good to hear from you, Pardy. Pardy was on the show the other day, in fact, and good to hear him getting in touch with the programme as well. If it's a topic you want to keep talking about, then do keep emailing us about it. Radio@rnib.org.uk is our email address. You can, of course, get us on social media as well. Chris will be back soon with more of your views as you send them in. Chris, thanks for coming in.
No problem, Stephen. Thank you very much.
This is The Daily Connect on RNIB Connect Radio.
The Daily Connect podcast.
Finally on the podcast today, a chance to hear from our Society of the Week, which this week is the Macular Society. It's an organisation that helps those with macular degeneration up and down the country. Well, Ken Eggleston has been using the service for a while, and he talks about how he came into contact with the charity and what it did for him.
Hi, my name's Ken Eggleston. I'm a retired dairy farmer from the lovely Vale of Bever in Leicestershire, where we make Stilton cheese and other stuff like that. I've been aware that I had a problem with my eyesight since the 90s, but it was only when I went to get an HGV license in the year 2000. I got picked up on some vision field flaws, and the DVLA in their wisdom took my license away. For the next 10 years or so, we were sort of fighting to keep my license, and I was getting help from all over the place and doing all kinds of legitimate things to maintain my license, which we did. But in 2012, I decided not to renew my license as it was getting increasingly difficult. So at that point, I became registered as partially sighted. I was registered with our local service provider in Leicestershire, Avista, and I went on some of their workshops and things and got great benefit from it. And as a result of that, somewhere along the line, became aware of the Macular Society. And it was something that tipped my interest particularly was when they sort of were offering a free trial. It said, well, you know, we'd like to expand the membership. We're a go-ahead organisation. Join us for free for 6 months. If you like it, we'll convert that into a full membership. If not, thanks and, you know, goodbye. So I joined on this free membership deal, and when the pack arrived through from them, I was very impressed with the quality of the information. Not only the content that was in there, which was impressive in itself, but also the fact that I could actually read it properly. For me, it was a joy to be able to read a magazine and information, not just in large print, you know, large black and white print, but this was stylish and I was very comfortable reading it. So I got the magazine and was reading my first issue and going through it quite well, and got to about page 15, and it told me about a competition where if you entered, there were two conditions of entry, one of which was that you had to be a member of the Macular Society, which I was, and the other one was that you couldn't enter with a driving license, which I didn't have, having given up 4 years earlier, and it said opportunity to drive a supercar. So I entered that, and on we went. I also noted in the magazine that there was roadshows going around the country in various places. The nearest one to me would be Birmingham, and I can get there easily off on the train, but that one was full. But there was another one at Hull, and from here I could actually get to Hull quite easily without changing trains or anything. So I went up there and went to this roadshow and thoroughly enjoyed the information and the talks that were on there, and I was really impressed with the quality of what we've been told. I subsequently joined an initiative they've got, which is to create sort of a database of partially sighted people in different categories that might be able to help in research projects. Because, you know, I've sort of take advantage of things like bus pass and disability rail card and things like that, and help from family and friends. But, you know, I want to be able to contribute and put something back in. So if there's any way that I can do that by sort of helping in trials, we're all here to help ourselves along and help everybody else as well. So I joined that, and I've done a couple of simple trials with them. They sort of give you address to approved organisations, universities or medical research or whatever. So I've done a couple of those. And I've got to say, I've been thoroughly impressed with all the contact I've had with them. Find them a really go-getting outfit. You know, they're focused, they're moving forward, they're doing a good job. And, you know, I'm very pleased to be a part of it. My advice is to people, get in touch and let them see what they can do for you. Look, if there's any roadshows and things coming around your area, go there and have a chat. I don't think you'll be disappointed. The Supercar Day was a great thing. I've sort of driven all my life, and I can drive anything, and always taken a joy and a pleasure in doing it. While the DVLA were trying to ban me, I actually went and got my advanced driving license at the same time, just to prove that I was still capable of doing it. When this opportunity came up to enter the Supercar Day, having not driven for 4 years, I thought, right, I'm going to have a go. And there were various cars that you were able to nominate, and one of the ones that caught my eye was a 1967 Ford Mustang. In my time, I've had several Ford Capris and loved them, and of course the Ford Mustang is the granddaddy of the Capris, so I thought this has to be for me. Anyway, I was lucky enough to be awarded a chance to drive this, so a very good friend took me down to Upper Hayford in near Oxford, onto a massive, great big runway where these beautiful cars were lined up. And the Mustang was there, bright red. It looked like the paint was half an inch thick. It looked gorgeous. It sounded terrific. And I thought, great, I'm going to get the chance to go up and down the runway. So that's what we did. Had about a half an hour behind the wheel. Somebody sat in the car alongside with the ability to take over should anything go amiss, which it wasn't going to. And it was a question of have some fun up and down a runway with no other vehicles around. And I said at the time, if that's the last chance I get to drive, then so be it. You know, it's a nice rounding off. So, you know, I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was wonderful to have this sort of experience and be able to do something that I thought I'd never be able to do again.
Well, there you go. That's Ken's view of the Macular Society, our Society of the Week. And you can nominate yours by emailing radio@rnib.org.uk. Or, of course, you can get in touch on social media and get in touch that way. On Twitter, we're @RNIB Radio. You can use the hashtag TheDailyConnect. Tomorrow on the programme, it is The Forum, our chance to sit down and discuss all kinds of issues, including hiding your sight. And when is it time to come out as a blind person? Well, we are going to be talking to Dawn presenter Red Sail, and also the A Little Alternative programme host David Hogg. They're joining me for the forum. Not just that topic, many, many others as well. All to come on tomorrow's programme, live on the radio, Freeview 7:30 on TV and online as well. You'll find us there at 10 o'clock in the morning. Join me live or back on the podcast after 5 here on RNIB Connect's podcast. Catch you tomorrow.
The Daily Connect podcast.